was that tune you were just playing? Should that be the new intro music?
Let's give it a whirl, huh? Ready? Welcome to the podcast for empathy and imagination. My name is Drew Clark.
My name is Aubrey Cloutier. Welcome.
Welcome to the show. Thank you, everybody, for being here.
So it's been a while.
It's been a long while.
What's that tune there?
This is one of my rap beats.
Nice. You got any sick lyrics? Sick drops?
Here they come right now. So, welcome, everybody.
Welcome to you.
Gradient Studios. This is our very first podcast, full video. We're here. We're live. We're juicing it.
Yeah, this is exciting. We're in Crockett now.
Yeah, we moved.
Crockett, California, north of Berkeley. Enjoying some beer. Cheers.
Today's beer is Undercover Shutdown.
I think this is my first time having it. It's pretty tasty. The red ale. So what do we got? Fuck.
Let's check in with how it's going. I want to talk about how it's going with me. I want to hear about what's going on with you.
It's going pretty good with me.
What are you doing? What are you up to?
Oh, playing jazz with my roommate. Mm-hmm. My roommate plays keyboards. So it's fun because I've never really been a jazz guy. So it's fun to explore that. And I mean, it's kind of cliche, you know, you get older and you listen to jazz, but.
Play golf.
Right. One out of two so far. So I'm playing.
No, we played golf together.
We did play golf. I haven't played in a while. But yeah, it's a great mental. It's like a mental game. It is like golf in some ways. It's a mental game. It's very friendly to improvisation. I mean, that's almost its ethos is improvisation.
You're sort of dancing around the one, right?
Right.
Okay.
You know, it's encouraged to do your own version of a song. Like, you know, you hear about jazz standards.
Okay.
And it's like everyone has their own version of it.
So it's kind of.
So there's a lot of improvisation. It's one of the few genres that has a lot of humor in it. I think black metal, rock and roll also have a lot of humor.
But you don't hear a lot of humor in pop or country, really.
Yeah.
It's usually really tongue-in-cheek if it's pop.
Yeah, and country's sort of self-deprecating humor.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I got a bottle of Jim and a bottle of Jack. And I'm tired. Got a heartbroken heart. You know,
and I got a heart attack. You know, there's some of that in there too.
Yep. So playing a lot of jazz. The rock band that I'm in is sort of on hiatus. I guess in true rock band fashion, one of the guys is going through some tough times, I think. So it's
you're talking about your cool band, Friends of Anjan?
Yeah. Friends of Anjan.
Those are some cool, nice dudes. I got to meet those guys.
Yeah, cool guys. Great musicians. Great gear and sound and all that stuff. But it's sort of on hiatus right now.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Just because one of the guys is going through some stuff.
Family, personal stuff?
Well, he used to be sort of an addict, I think. Painkillers. And we suspect he might be slipping back down that dark road. So, I haven't played with those guys since you and I played with them.
Oh. I basically tried out for Friends of Anjan.
Right.
And I had a great time. And it seemed like they had a good time, too. There was a big question that was posited, and that was, could the Roland TD-50 work in such a...
Right.
Such a band that so prizes... audio quality.
Yeah,
they do.
I think that's a big thing.
It's like
the jury's still out on that, I think, because you know, Orville's really the guitarist is very like sort of anxious about that, I think, like you were saying.
I understand.
So yeah, playing music. Finally got this podcast studio set up pretty decently.
Yeah, this is looking good.
We just brought all these foamy foams, and we got some video, and we got a new setup. So bear with us, but it's pretty good so far.
Yeah, it's working out.
Yeah, pretty good, you know. Life is pretty good. I've been doing a lot of like sort of work lifestyle design. I don't really like that phrase, but
okay.
Just like working on mindset stuff like that.
Oh, that's
checklists
cool.
For mindset and habits, daily habits. One thing I did was go back 5 years in your email.
Oof.
And just reply to one of them.
Just reply to
me. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So I did that recently with my friend Bill. He had sent like 5 years ago, 2012. He had sent me something like airfare, like an airfare deal to Florida where he lives. And I just recently, like just the other day,
was the deal still available?
No. No, but I replied to him, and he was just ecstatic. He's like, "Holy shit!" You know,
feel like we haven't. Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's kind of a good thing to get into. Something I've been doing.
That's a cool thing. I like.
And
that.
Actually, unrelated to that, my buddy from my younger days. Reached out to me recently, just randomly.
Like when you were a kid?
Yeah, yeah. From like 15 to 25 or something.
That's a big chunk of time.
Yeah. We didn't go to high school together, but we did go to the same college, and we were in a band together, and we had a record come out. So that was kind of like, huh, like the universe giving back to... You know, just days after I had gone back and emailed my friend from 5 years ago.
This other friend reaches out.
Yeah. So that was cool. What else? Doing a lot of hot tubbing and...
Hot tubbing? What do you mean?
Plugging plumbing.
You just go into hot tubs all day?
Plugging PVC into other PVC and also plugging computer cables into other computers.
Oh, man.
Blue-collar job and a white-collar job.
Right.
So that's pretty cool. Keeping busy. Yeah. I feel like I should have more to say there, but...
Well, there might be more. You know, maybe I'll start and you'll come up more. With more things, yeah. You know?
I mean, there's always a lot of shit going on in my life. Yeah. Try to do a lot of creative stuff and take care of myself.
That's a good combo.
How about you? What's been going on?
Yeah, I've also been a lot has changed. I think our last episode we were on location at the Lounge de Missouri, and we did an on-site podcast. And I'm not even sure how many things have changed since then, but quite a few. Well, I moved. I live in Crockett now. I think you all know that I'm getting married in September.
Oh, that's right. I don't think our listeners might not know that.
Yeah, I asked a lady to marry me, and she said yes.
Cool.
It was like an emphatic yes, so.
Nice.
That's cool.
Plus, I guess women don't ask men to marry them, do they?
It's rare.
Does that happen?
It does happen. It does happen.
You'd think in this age of 7,000th wave feminism that would happen. More often, but...
I think feminism, that's a topic.
I think there's still some... I think chivalry's alive and well, man.
I hope so.
And I think everyone is happy that it is. Most people.
My lady, who she would probably describe herself as a feminist, we've clearly had those conversations where it's like, I definitely am, she'll say something like, I definitely am a feminist, and then she'll make a very sexist request. Mm-hmm. Like if something that would be unequal, like there's a, something scary or gross,
right, right.
or heavy.
Yeah,
that's definitely the man's job.
That's I think that's why the new, I mean the new Ghostbusters.
That was such
a political. It was like the most political film ever.
And Milo Yiannopoulos busted out on one of the actors on that show. Yeah,
a lot of people in the. You know, one guy was saying that it's just it didn't work because most women are scared of a spider in the bathtub. So, you know, like men and women are different. I mean,
there are gender roles.
That's controversial to say that now, though.
Yeah, I've heard men and women are different. Where this one warrior was like, oh, there's no medical viability scientifically to show that there's even two sexes.
Or was this the Jordan Peterson?
The Jordan Peterson thing? Was involved, and there was a gentleman.
It's like a talk show, Canadian talk show?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Okay,
yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about, where he was like, there isn't really any sexes. And like, well, except for the X and Y chromosome. That's kind of hard data. It really is. If that isn't hard data, then what is?
Right. Science is, you know, science is the best we have. And probably everything that we know in science is incorrect because science is just this battleground, right, of ideas. Mm-hmm. And the sort of the most, the idea that describes reality the best is the victorious idea. For a while.
And yeah, for a while.
Until a better idea comes along, right?
So, totally.
So yeah, for now, I'm gonna trust in science. I think, there's men and women. Those are the two.
There are men and women. And there are people who are in between men and women.
Hermaphrodites.
But there aren't people outside of that.
Right.
There's like two men, like ultra masculine, ultra feminine, and we're, you know, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
But you're not out of there.
Right.
Like, there was one worm, wormzid?
A pronoun?
Yeah, a pronoun of, like, worm person or, like, worm entity. Like, there was a, you know, there's a lot of.
Right.
There's a, okay, folks, so if you don't know, Canada made some laws that are pretty anti-free speech.
Yeah, did that pass? I haven't been following.
Yeah, they're active. And the thing is it's really controversial for sure, because from a certain light, I believe that those laws look like a charge for social justice.
Right.
Which the word social and justice, I'm okay with. I definitely think we could use some. But if you had total justice, that's all you would be doing. But that's a tangent. So
right. Well,
right now,
justice can't really modify any other. Can't really be modified by any words, right? Justice is justice.
Well, there's a couple kinds. So, there's retributive justice.
Right.
And there's empathetic justice, I might say.
But social justice?
Social justice.
It's like saying automobile justice. Like, what does that mean?
I mean, I have an opinion about that, but that's because I just have a love for automobiles. Right. So it's like...
Anyway, go ahead. Canada laws.
Now it's not that a law is set in place so that you cannot call somebody something bad. Like, actually, that I can jive with. Like, if someone's like, man, that name actually really hurts, could you call me by my first name?
Sure.
Please.
Sure. But no one should be coerced by the government to use these words.
If you can request that of me. Of course. And I might do it.
But I don't. I shouldn't be compelled under threat of violence to...
Imprisonment.
To do that.
Imprisonment.
Because every law is basically a gun at the end of the day.
Because of its power?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what law means, right? If you break the law, you go to jail. And they're going to arrest... They're going to pull a gun on you and arrest you. If you resist, you'll get shot. So, I'm all for, people requesting that of others, but once you start banning words and enforcing words, then you get into weird Orwellian. I mean, that's fascism, right?
It is, by definition.
And like thought crime and all that stuff. So
yeah.
So it's no bueno, as far as I'm concerned.
I think that there's definitely room to improve social justice. There's definitely room to improve.
Yeah.
And I don't think the way to approach that is to criminalize words, because
right,
this is not going to work.
Right. And that's why I think that anti-Holocaust denial laws...
Oh, that's bad, should, too. You should let those people be ostracized like right, the right. Weirdos they are.
Let them deny the Holocaust. Let them...
be laughed out.
Let them be laughed at. Let them be... You know, let them signal that they're morons and assholes. And to that extent, you can see why Muslims were against the cartooning of Muhammad.
Wait, what do you mean? What's from, that story? What do you mean?
Well, because Muslims could say, well, you have anti-Holocaust denial laws. Why can't we have anti-slandering Muhammad laws, right?
Ah.
That's why you need free speech without exception, because otherwise you get into this slippery slope where everyone wants a piece of the censorship.
Should any speech be censored or curtailed, in your opinion?
No. I mean, the only thing is hate speech if you're inciting violence. Like, hey, let's go burn down this person's house, right?
You'd be
but
that.
You could be free to do that, but that is, I think that is on the books as a crime. Inciting people to violence.
Do you agree with that crime or book that law? Do you agree with it? If you were a police chief, would you follow it?
I think so, because it is a disincentive to people.
You think hate...
But you should be able to say, oh, all frogs are stupid. Right? but not, hey, let's go kill every frog. There's a difference. Because one, you're trying to get people to commit violence. So... But other than, I mean, you know, again, slippery slope. But I think you should be able to say whatever you want to say. And if it's something stupid, the free market of ideas will take care of it. And you'll be ostracized. You'll be thought of as a dope or whatever. That's how it works. And that's why the free market is pretty cool in terms of capitalism and the free market of ideas. Bad ideas are weeded out.
That's been something in that zone I've been really on. Like, we're talking about what's been going on lately. What's going on lately for me is really trying to meta think about the current political and social situation we're in. I mean, you have this new president, and it's heavily debated, and there's lots of action going in different directions. And I've been really trying to think about how can I apply empathy and imagination to the situation, and I've come up with a couple of things I'm actually curious.
Yeah, let's do it.
To see what you think of. So I think the sort of...
Empathy cuts both ways, right? You have to be sort of... put yourself in the shoes of both sides.
I think there's internal and external empathy, and their external empathy is like pan-empathy. Mm. Like, it can go all directions, and then internal, I just mean to also include your own self and thoughts.
Like feeling for skillets and frying pans, like pan empathy.
Yeah. Sort of, except for pan.
Cookware
I mean
empathy?
All.
Yeah, no, I know. Pan empathy, okay. What do you got?
So when I think about what right now in the U.S., and really when you talk about the U.S., you're talking about the leader of the free world, and by that I mean...
Yeah, most powerful person on the planet, really.
By far. By really, really far.
I mean, maybe there's a shadow government, not all that stuff, but...
There is.
In terms of concentrated power into one single individual, that's...
Because the U.S. is so rich and has the biggest army of all time,
yep.
And we don't even have that many people. And we've decided to lock up 2 million of them. Mostly because of drug crimes. These are drugs.
Yeah, prison is a bunch of...
People love drugs.
I don't know what the solution is, but it's a bunch of bullshit. Anyway, go ahead.
I have thoughts on that, too. So, like, I really think that this left and right, liberal conservative, Democrat Republican, I would also add in male female. I would say that is part of the debate that we hardly talk about.
Right.
that generally speaking, the left can exemplify certain popularly known feminine attributes, and the right can often certainly represent cohesive masculine views. And I think that they're both trying to protect us.
Oh, you
I
think
really
it's...
believe that?
Oh, that's interesting. So you think the left is has more of a feminine sort of proportion?
And... You could get me in trouble real easy with that one.
Well, I'm not trying to get you in trouble.
But what I mean is that there are like the whole allow everyone in, make sure to take care of the people. That's kind of a leftist idea. And the right is more like, yo, we also have to stay a fucking alive.
If we want to continue to be the quote unquote best,
we
got to,
there has to be,
you
got to
nurture that. You can't just let the, you know,
I believe I have
the barbarians at the gate. That's really,
yeah. And so I really think the left and the right, the liberals, conservatives, both are trying to protect us. They really are. And they're both talking about a larger scheme. The fact that we have to draw this line and divide them, I think, is basically why it's so challenging now. I also believe that axis is one of many. I believe there are other axes besides liberal and conservative. Of course, there could be other parties, Green Party, Libertarian, but they would still be liberal or conservative.
I think it's natural that humans have a binary separation of things.
Oh, of course.
No matter how many different individuals of a certain group or whatever, humans tend to go for the separation, the binary separation. And I think that's because of our biology, right? You have left, right. You got two arms, two legs, all this. I think it's built in. We want to just by virtue of biology, we want to split things into two parties.
At least.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we want to split those
almost at the very least.
At least.
We're sort of, you know, compelled to almost because it's part of, again, part of our biology, right? That's my theory.
You're adding to my theory too, because like there's something there that's primal and real about conservatism and liberalism. There's something real there, and I think they're both necessary. So an image I came up with this morning is like, so say you have the line, right, of liberal and conservative, and on that line, most people are on one side or the other. Some are near the center, and some people are way fucking out.
Right.
It seems like the very unobvious but natural thing to do is say, you can see me. Say this is the line here. This is our line, and here's the liberal left and the conservative right. Mm-hmm. And you could say that I'm going to design a marker over time about, you know, what we do. And so we have a new liberal president, and then we get way out here, and we have all these services and then free cell phones for all the people on welfare, and then you get way out here, and then you go back or something. I think about George W. Bush. You get back way over here, and you're back into, like, you know.
Do you think it's a fluctuation?
War first. It's a fluctuation. I think it's like war first, America first, law and order, and you're like, well, okay, but then we have forgiveness and remember to Obama, Clinton, even
right,
Bill Clinton, and then that. What I think
it's a constant vacillation between the two.
We need less. Sine wave. This spike is killing us. I think we need this. We need to just be doing this.
Yeah,
all the time.
Maybe.
I think that's a closer approximation.
Maybe so, but it also seems like stagnation, perhaps.
Well, we're stagnated now.
Maybe.
Well, I have.
There's a couple things there. There's a couple things there. We might be stagnating because we don't have a definite vision for the future, right? Think about the 40s, 50s. We were optimistic. And, Peter Thiel talks about this in his book Zero to One, so it's not my idea. But 40s and 50s, we were optimistic and we had a definite vision for the future. We're gonna go to the moon, you know, we're gonna be in space, there's gonna be cool shit going on in space. That didn't work out. There was the Cold War. There was the Cold War, nuclear freeze. We did go to space. We just scratched the surface of it. And Peter Thiel talks about how right now we're still optimistic, but we're indefinite about the future. We don't know. We don't have a clear vision, right?
Is that like because people are tired of capitalism?
I don't know why, but okay. Like my vision for the future that would be cool if everyone was on board for was, yeah, let's go back to space. Let's colonize the moon. We're going to get resources from the moon, Mars, and we're going to colonize the entire galaxy. And there'd just be a band of green stars, right? Because all of them are terraformed and flourishing with life. That's a cool, definite vision. Right now, we're optimistic, but we have an indefinite vision, and that's why everything's like markets, selling, internet. Everything's just like versions of information, like finagling. Finagling information. Just finagling more information, like not so much concrete things.
Yeah, we don't have a goal. Where's the plan?
And like someone like Elon Musk's, it seems like he's simpatico with my plan. Right. That's okay. Elon Musk,
big fan.
He couldn't make it
today.
Not
perfect.
He couldn't make it today. But he has a vision. Like, yeah, let's new energy. Let's revamp cars. Let's go to space. Let's do it, right? And imagine if everyone sort of shared that vision. We were able to go on the moon. We were able to get to the moon in a very short period of time. You know, we decide to go and we go very quickly. If we had that sort of concerted effort towards
feeding everyone,
or just the vision I just talked about, that would be great. Now, feeding everyone,
it's a small part of your vision.
It's a small part. And I don't think that needs to be solved before we go colonize other places.
Agreed. We can't wait for that. We can't wait. No, totally.
Because humans are humans. There's always going to be a fucked up part.
Yeah, that's how we advance. Something's fucked up.
So, yeah, I think that's why we're in this quandary of sort of just finessing markets and information and service economy, apps, right? Because it's indefinite. We're sort of optimistic. Yeah, things are going to get better. But we don't really... There's no definite vision for what that looks like. That's why we're just piddling around with making new apps and new services.
New businesses.
We're not like, hey, let's go to the moon. It's going to be awesome.
Well, Elon is. But
Elon is, right. One,
sort of Mars,
one dude.
One rich guy. One rich guy.
Him and like James Cameron, and I'm sure there are others too. But
yeah, there are, yeah. But then you hear like Bill Gates... And maybe it was taken out of context, but I heard this quote of him saying, like, we need to reduce the human population by 15%, and here are the details how. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. I don't think that's what we need to do. That's scary.
We need more real estate.
I spent 9 years flying over this flat 48 beautiful space we call the United States. I was a flight attendant for 9 years.
There's a lot of room.
Fucking lot of room, dude.
Well, that goes back to seasteading. I mean, see our episode on seasteading. Because that's just untrammeled land.
Do you have a lighter?
Not land, but space. I don't have
a lighter. Well, you keep talking and keep rolling, because I'll be back in 20 seconds.
So we colonize, we set up cities on the ocean that are tethered to the shore for resources and to get them jump started and for security protection. And then we start to colonize the ocean. Now, simultaneously with that, we're working on getting cool rocket ships that aren't actually rockets, because rocketry hasn't made any advances, almost no significant
until this week. This week we made one.
Yeah, but it's still fuel burning in the thing, a big explosion. A big explosion underneath a phallus-shaped object that goes into the sky.
Did you hear about the recent metallic hydrogen find?
I did not.
So,
tell me about that.
I was just running. Metallic hydrogen, it's this really recent discovery I just learned about the other day. We'll post a link.
Whew, metallic hydrogen?
Yeah. So they've now made a small amount of and figured out a way to compress the fuel, solid fuel source down infinitesimally.
They think that the core of Jupiter is metallic hydrogen.
Well, then let's mine it when we get
there's
there.
No, there's no solid core. It's just...
just metallic hydrogen. Yeah. And I guess metallic hydrogen is a little tricky to make, right? So it seems like that there's this new fuel, and they claimed would be how we would get to places farther, cheaper, straighter, faster, better.
Mm-hmm. Hope it's still going. It turned off. Is that?
We got several cameras. We'll get it going.
Huh. It seemed to be going. Now it's going. Is that one still going?
Yeah, you're rocking and rolling, bro. Huh. Looking real good.
Oh, cannot record video. Hang on.
Standing by.
There's not enough available storage.
How is that?
Well, shit. Okay, let's just keep going.
We'll keep going. We still got this one.
Still got it's that right. one.
We're okay. We're rocking. So,
metallic hydrogen,
they basically did just make a discovery that's supposed to be much more bang for the buck, essentially. Much more, like an order of magnitude more. So we may have found a way to make explosions, like you said, but in a way that's so much more efficient that it would make it so that we could eventually leave the solar system.
Yeah.
I am
and that's
for...
That would be cool for robotic missions. I feel like in the near term, we gotta get to the moon. We gotta get to Mars. We gotta set up some colonies. We gotta start terraforming, mining, you know?
I agree.
There's enough resources to go around.
Even with our fucked up system, we still need to do it.
Yeah.
Because what if shit happens to Earth?
The system's going to be fucked up pretty much all the time. There's this guy, Daniel Dennett.
Oh, I've read.
He has this one thing. He's like, everything is evolution, right? Biology, ideas, market, capitalism. Everything is constantly undergoing a process of evolution. And what that means is there's always going to be mutations. There's always going to be some weird thing that comes in from left field. That's why I think your sine wave analogy, we need the extremes. There needs to be some extreme spikes, at least, where some weird thing comes in, right?
Okay, fair enough. But should that be the norm? Should that be
20%? That is the norm of evolution. Evolution just progresses and... The only way that evolution progresses is by mutation.
Well, I mean in our political discourse. What we do is we hire a president and they spend their first all this time backtracking. We hire an actor.
He is a, okay.
To backtrack everything the last person did, right? And then we hire another actor and they backtrack everything they did. We're actually going fucking backwards. We're going backwards with this political system. We need to evolve beyond it.
Maybe so.
I'm a staunch resource Bayesian.
I get it.
I'm also for one human family. I'm for acknowledging, recognizing, participating without restricting free speech and free action that doesn't harm others, one human family. And I don't mean I want the globalists to control everything. That's not what I mean. Globalists are described as wealthy elite business and economic leaders who possess so much wealth it's hard to describe, where you have the top 1/10 of 1% owning more than 90% of rent, right? So that's not what I mean. I mean, getting away from that problem. And if you all are listening now, you're 0.1%ers. You're human too. And you probably have a lot of unmet needs. And I bet a little empathy and imagination could go a long way.
Hell yeah. And yes, and if you're a 1%er and you want to help, just remember my optimistic vision of the future. Colonize the oceans. Colonize the planets. Let's get life in every nook and cranny in the universe that we can. Mm-hmm. And what else is there, right? What other end game seems worthwhile?
Cultural advancement.
What your end game of like having just oppression across the globe or having slaves and just amassing more wealth at the top. That, again, that's a negative end game because there's only finite resources. As far as we know, the universe is well nigh infinite. And it would take us, you know, an infinity minus one number of years to colonize the whole thing. So we got to get on that project.
Yes. Let's colonize. Let's colonize as human beings to spread out our seed because I think humans are cool.
Yeah. And that way, again, for me, it's like the harboring and flourishing of life. You got to harbor life, like, you know, husbandry. It's talked about in the Bible. It's our responsibility as the most sentient beings to take care of other life that isn't as smart as us. And I think that's pretty cool because biodiversity is a good thing. Primarily because of medicine, you know. There's some crazy number, like most of the cures for things have come from the Amazon because biodiversity is so fucking crazy.
Crazy, yeah. If I can borrow from one of my great thinking heroes, Sam Harris, he recently said, imagine if you could set of events in motion and say you could, with MRI scanning, measure a scenario in which there was the maximum amount of suffering possible for everybody alive. Like just on the data point, just on the chart, somewhere on the chart, this is how, or this is what measurably is the most extreme suffering for everyone. So that we can all agree.
Like measuring a brain and seeing that it's suffering the most?
Of comparing human flourishment to human suffering and how we're really beginning to measure that now.
Okay.
So if you can imagine a world where maximum human suffering of everybody, we could all agree that that is a thing to avoid. We can all agree.
If you value human well-being.
Well, okay. Right? So that's not what I'm saying, but I hear what you're saying.
I'm just saying everyone has a belief system. Whether they know it or not.
If somebody wants to consider the most possible suffering for all people as an option of their discourse,
right,
they're not at the table anymore. I'm sorry. You're not invited.
Okay.
We need to agree that that is the worst possible thing and that we need to move forward.
Unless you're a self-hater, right?
In self-hate, music comes out of self-hate, and I love music, and I've hated myself sometimes. It's fine.
Sure.
We need to do that, but it's like if we can't agree that that is, in fact, a thing to avoid, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and I agree that we should avoid that, but I also think people should be free to disagree with me.
Mm-hmm.
Someone might be like, yeah, humans are totally suck and we should be exterminated and there should be maximum suffering.
Until we're exterminated?
Yeah. Someone
you should be allowed to say that.
Someone should be allowed to say that and think that. But I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, how can we?
And again, my belief is like, yeah, human well-being is important. And it seems like maybe the most important thing, because this is how meaning gets started, and this is how we are a way for the universe to know itself, as Carl Sagan said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. So, that's why I'm all about flourishment, harboring of life, and expanding the reach of humankind.
To scoop in some of the mess on that topic, to scoop in a little bit, because I want to take some of the yang in here and splash it in so you can talk about it.
Okay.
What do you say to people? Thank you. What do you say to people who go, well, Aubrey, you and Drew have a privileged position to want that because you don't understand and you can't understand the strife of other cultures of people. And so you wanting one human family and us to colonize together every possible surface we can get our fucking little hands on. Mm-hmm. It's like, what do you say? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Like when someone says, well, you're in a privileged position to think that, that's not how life works for other people. And so on.
Well, aren't they guilty of what they're accusing me of, though, by saying that to me?
Keep going. Keep going. Right? What do you mean?
Well, they're presuming my thoughts and feelings and situation, and in so doing, accusing me of that very thing. You can't possibly know what their life is like. However, your life is like this. You're privileged. Here's what your life is like. So you can't know what their life is like. It's a contradiction.
Okay.
It's a contradiction.
I get you.
That is a valid concern. Yeah, I don't know what their life is like. But again, if we can agree that human well-being is something that is valuable and can be sort of talked about, that's how we get to the next level.
Okay. All right. I accept your answer.
I mean, no one can be anyone else. You can't know another culture.
Looking back.
No. I mean, I know, I know where you're going, though. I know you can.
What are you saying? Where am I going?
Well, you could say, like, well, you know, certain cultures are just there. Everyone's happy in the culture. You may think it's oppressive. You may think it's a bad system of culture, but you don't know. So, and everyone in the culture is happy. So, yeah, you know. I don't know. Empathy and imagination. You got to think of the end game. What's the end game of the culture?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to posit that an end game of a culture could be to measure and meet the needs of all of the people involved.
And that sounds like democracy. So, I mean, the closest thing to that. The closest active thing is that.
Yeah, it's true. They're not very close, but it is the closest.
It's the closest.
There's a big distance.
The closest galaxy is 250 light years away, but it is the closest.
And I have great humbleness. I spent all of my 20s ignoring all politics because I was like, well, it's just all shit and it's going to die soon anyway. And I was right. And I can also now in my 30s be like, well, maybe I could participate in it until it dies. Because I'm a believer that this socioeconomic system's days are numbered, as all systems are. And generally they call the system something like 250 years old. I don't know exactly what they consider, but
1776, I think.
They generally say that systems don't usually last more than that. So far,
right. Every if you look at the civilization throughout history, again, it's like your sine wave, mm-hmm. triumph and collapse, repeated over and over again, and even biologically too. Mm. Massive extinction, massive outgrowth of life, extinction, outgrowth.
It's like.
And end game. What would be the coolest end game for human?
If we can agree that society, all humans share the same needs, and we can more and more measure, even if we can't measure, we can, even if we could see that we can't, that even counts as some information. Mm-hmm. So the even the tiniest fraction of measurement of whether those needs are being met or not is valid up until it's replaced by something else. So that's what science is, not like
right, again,
a stagnant thing. Science is the closer approximations.
Everything's evolving, right? Science, culture, biology. This is Dan Dennett.
Sure.
Hypothesis. So yeah, politics is constantly evolving, right? Democracy is sort of a newer idea, at least free market capitalism and democracy the way it is now. And it just it replaced something before it, and on and on and on. So
what's the next thing?
What's the next thing? And the next thing is just going to be an iteration of, you know, a slight variation of what came before it. And then eventually there'll be a mutation that comes in.
God, I hope
to totally change it, right? It could be a good or bad change, but a mutation. And I don't know. That's a very compelling way to look at the world, as just everything is evolving and obeys the process of evolution.
It must, almost, except for, ooh.
So every idea sort of fits its environment at the time.
That when that clashes, there are troubles. And I think
totally
here another topic totally. Is like in this conversation. This is also controversial.
It's like, welcome to our controversy episode.
Okay, so I know and love and have learned from and appreciate thoroughly some people who either were or are involved in the religion of Islam. Mm. Okay. You and I used to work with people who came from that culture.
That's true.
And
they were very cool.
One of the some of the coolest people ever. Mm-hmm. And I'm just
anecdotal evidence, though.
It's anecdotal, sure. Anecdotal evidence. I also have known other folks that I've met through, say, Evan and his school friends in that world, who were mind-blowingly amazing people.
Sure, sure. And Christian and Christians and course. Jews.
Sure,
and
sure. All religions.
Mormons.
So coolness can go into any religion, and it does.
Totally.
And there seems to be an ever mounting amount of evidence to show that between Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, there is a measurable difference of harm to be measured in present day. Sure,
in terms
Jews
of in
had
terms
their time
of the,
with the sword,
the execution of beliefs,
the well,
like in terms of believing something and following through on that.
Well, really, it's like. They, I don't know if it's they, hardcore Islam, the Quran is being followed by ISIS. It
right,
is.
Right.
And the moderate, friendly, peace-loving Muslims who are dragged into that, they are like, as I understand it, like, no, it's not us. They're not Islam. They're like dismissive. They're like, of course, it'd be weird to them to consider them a part of what they do because
right,
they
right,
see
right.
it as such a
be like Christian fanatics not eating shrimp and
yeah exactly
gays or whatever
mm-hmm.
some yeah which has happened, and there's probably like one guy in the world that still is that, but
it's true it has
but
happened. They've modernized
they've modernized and they've reformed sort of their preachings. You don't go to church and they're telling you to kill people.
The child rape thing is still going on.
Oh, yeah, big
time.
And
that's another topic. But I'm afraid to say that I think the only thing to really do to move forward with the trouble of, ISIS and the Taliban and all the radical groups who love Allah in their own way, we need the moderates. We need to empower the moderates. We need to glorify and brighten and give energy to the moderate, peace-loving Muslims who will draw a line in the sand and go, these things have to go, like the killing people and the raping and the cutting the heads off and the cutting the clitoris off. Like, that's where the fucking line is.
Yeah.
And we're on this side of the line because we want to play with capitalism in America. We want to play with them.
If you want to talk about human well-being, that seems like the best route.
Because then we'll have so many people who come over here and go like, actually, yeah, I want to use the internet and have communications with women as if
they're humans. I want to listen to Western music.
Yeah, I want to listen to fucking Johnny B. Goode, and you're right for it. And then the folks on the other end, they have a serious problem on their hands because now it's the whole world who will defend and back this group up.
Just like like the KKK. Like if the KKK was as big and organized as ISIS, yeah, people would shut it down.
If they were still killing people, which to my knowledge they're not, could be.
But probably not.
Probably not. Not
and
now.
And the real KKK is probably like 20 guys.
No, it's growing. Every post-war era, the KKK swells because all these veterans come back and they have nowhere to fucking go and they're all fucked up and they all join the KKK. Check it out.
Okay.
So there's always there's tens of thousands of KKK members.
Of thousands?
And it's growing a lot. Yes.
I don't know about that.
Maybe. Check out. Google it.
Tens of thousands. That's surprising.
Yeah. It's all post-war. If that's true. People come back from the war. It's fucked up. They were just then they go there. Every war, you see a spike. And then it goes down.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So what happens if they become the majority? Would they necessarily be wrong because of their views, or would they be embraced as correct because they're the majority now?
Great question.
Again, this is the evolution of culture and ideas. The shitty ideas are weeded out.
Like the KKK is a shitty idea.
They're always around. They're always there. But some of them get weeded out, you know?
They get marginalized.
It's like pulp in the orange juice.
If you say KKK, even in Alabama, you know, dreaded Alabama, the people look at you weird. They're like,
Yeah.
It's been marginalized.
So, I mean, I guess if the beliefs of ISIS become super popular, maybe it's a good idea. I don't know, you know? But
well, that sounds very tolerant of you.
I think in the free market of ideas, ideas that contravene human well-being and the flourishment of life will not make it. I mean, I hope that's true. Yeah, that's controversial for sure. We talked about feminism. We sort of narrowly avoided talking about transgenderism by talking about feminism.
Well, let's talk about feminism and transgenderism. Let's talk about it. I mean, let's go there. It feels like this. We have to. I feel like I have to, because it's so on the tongue of everything, all media, all my friends. It's just
feminism. Or transgenderism?
Politics. Including those, like feminism, Republicans, and the Nazi Trump.
Nazi Trump, Hitler Trump, Angel Trump. Whatever you want to believe, at least it's kind of cool that you and I are actually more engaged in politics now than we were fucking 2 years ago.
We both are.
Right?
And your views have changed in my memory.
Yeah, my views have changed, yeah. I submit to evolution. I submit to changing one's mind. I think it's a good exercise. You can always change your mind back, you know.
But if you can try on a changed mind.
I mean, isn't that what empathy is all about?
Mm-hmm. Totally is.
It's like immersion. You want to go to a new country, go there for 6 months.
And check it out.
You want to learn a new language, go to a country for 6 months. Transgenderism?
Feminism and transgenderism.
I heard that Trump revoked the same-sex marriage laws.
No, he didn't.
He did or didn't?
Did not. He is pushing to remove the transgender bathroom initiative put forth by Obama. The fact that we're talking about...
That's what it is. Thank you for clarifying.
0.7% of the population's bathroom activities instead of what the fuck actually matters. First of all,
yeah, Republican bathrooms don't matter.
GOP leaders in D.C. have done way more weird, sexy, bad shit in bathrooms than the whole of the trans community in bathrooms. So who the fuck are we really talking about here?
Well, that's, again, slippery slope.
Right? Well, it's here. We're sloping. So the transgender bathroom thing is like more Republican powerful elites have fucked people who didn't want to be fucked in bathrooms than trans people. And we're just talking about trans people in bathrooms like it's the problem. We're focusing on that.
That's what they call a false flag, it seems like. Like, hey, let's pay attention to this because there's some other way crazier, weird, dark shit happening somewhere else.
It's like, look at this shit over here while we're like fighting 40 wars.
Yeah.
Dude, this tastes interesting.
Doesn't it?
It's like kind of weird.
It is kind of weird.
It's like burnt rubber, kind of. Is this thing on? Oh,
I think it's on, yeah.
Is there like some, I thought there was maybe a piece of plastic in there or something.
Is it?
Not that I promote this brand or anything.
Trans.
So, dude, okay, I talked a little. How about you talk a little bit?
About what? Trans?
I mean, feminism, modern feminism, and the trans well, agenda.
That does taste weird. Modern feminism is like, you know, I'm all for equality, but equality. So that means, and so a lot of the social justice today is like, we need more women in math and science and in the military, right? Do we need more women in like magic shows? Janitors. We need more women janitors.
There aren't very many women janitors, are there?
We need more women tractor drivers.
Well, tractors.
No one is really pushing for those initiatives because those are things that women don't want to do.
Women want to do
or even we need more women in prison. There's a disproportion. Like if you apply the we got to have equal representation idea
ad absurdum,
if you apply it to other things, it becomes absurd.
So then if you're not careful, that'll
right
just keep right. fucking going
right. Be like, well, we need more women in the men's welterweight category. So much so that it just becomes all women. So it's like,
what do you think about men fighting women? Like Joe said, like a trans girl got into MMA and then was beating the shit out of women. That's like a weird extreme thing. It did also happen.
It is a weird extreme thing. And maybe there should be a third league.
Like a trans league.
Right, but
what do you do when there's not enough trans people to have their own league? I guess I would say maybe some kind of statistical breakdown, right? Because that's the only way people are going to agree. If we're like, yeah, have you been trans for 30 years or 10 years? Like what's the proportion of your life that you've been this other gender? And then whatever the major proportion is, that's your league.
So sounds like science. You better quit it because you stop it right there with your science talk.
So you're 40 and you've been a man for 30 years, right? So that's you're 75%.
So you're going to be in the men's league until you're a woman long enough, and then you would switch over to the women's league.
Yeah, when you're like 65 and you have
adamantine
implants, and you're now more a woman than you've ever been a man.
Yeah. These are off. We're down maybe that one.
You're probably off too, but that's cool.
Keep going. Actually, I have a solution. We'll use
that could be one solution for that.
Okay.
You might eventually get someone who's 50%, right? Mm-hmm. I'm 50 and I'm 25 years a woman, 25 years a man. Then you just wait a day. The next day, they're going to be that much more.
Whatever they chose. Which, yeah, sure, but, sure. Yeah. Okay, so tell me more about your opinion about transgenderism. And we have, and love, trans friends, both of us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you want to go by numbers, it's a tough road.
Give me this fat. What are the stats you're talking about?
And if 5 miles listening of rough road.
Check in with Google. Check our what we're going to say here, because don't just believe what you hear. Nail it.
Well, it used to, people who wanted to be, and again, this could be the evolution of ideas, right? Ideas change. It used to be a disorder if you thought you were a woman or you thought you were a man, but you were born the opposite of what you thought you were.
Correct.
So, and homosexuality used to be thought of as the same thing. A mental problem.
Got it.
So, whether or not that's true, I don't know. But we're actually in a different understanding of that, where we see it as a choice and not a problem. You can just choose to be male or female. Right?
Yeah. But if you can choose to be male or female, could you choose to be a different race or a different age?
There's people that are doing that.
Well, could that's I just say happened. I'm really 50? I'm just AM 50.
Right.
Fuck it.
Right.
Or why not? I'm 14.
That's a slippery slope. If I can just name what I am.
You could be any age, any race, any gender.
Yeah.
We have those measurements out of mere, like, well, it's utility. It's like science. Utility.
Science.
Yeah.
And this whole, it's weird, this, like, anti-science, movement. And it seems very, like, an undercurrent. No one's really aware of it, but it's definitely happening where...
Why are we anti-science? It's like,
yeah,
science.
So, I mean, yeah, but, yeah, medicine, but... It's just if you believe, you know, if you're born a man and you identify, right, you identify as a woman, then you're a woman. That's why people call it identity politics. Because people are just fucking, it's all about identity, you know, the oppression Olympics. I'm a transgendered, a homosexual, Native American. Like that's near the top of the oppression Olympics, because you can call everybody else out and be like, you're just talking from
transgendered
privilege.
Transgendered Native American, like elderly child, elderly, or like what?
Right. whatever the most quote unquote marginalized group is, if you can say you're that, then you can pass judgment on everybody else. Oh well, you're just talking from your privilege. You're just privileged. See, you don't understand what it's like to be a transgendered Native American
elderly child,
right? So they can always do that. And that's what's meant by virtue signaling.
Oh, okay.
The constant one up, like, well, you actually don't know. Only I know my, you know, and
okay. So it's private virtue.
Like, hey, don't be racist, but only I know what it's like to be black. Right. So there's this inherent contradiction constantly in these conversations.
You've heard the thing that white people cannot, receive racism.
Right, right.
You can't be racist towards a white person because of economic privilege. Have you heard that?
Bullshit. I've heard that. Yeah,
if you go to the dictionary and you look up the word racist, what do you see?
A picture of your face? No. yeah, it's
What's it approximately mean? What does racist against, approximately mean?
Discriminating against how would the dictionary phrase it, right?
We could
distrust or
that's like a bias. Prejudgment towards another group.
Bias towards another racial group.
Another racial group, yeah. Racist. So if you take the two words, ist is like it means you're a person who is sure about it. And race being the prefix is like that's what you're sure about. So Okay, so that's like racist. So that is if you're an extremely left person, you might say that effect is only possible outward from the dominant white patriarchy. It is a word designed to have it so that the economically oppressed, basically anything but the cisgendered, heteronormative, white of prime age male.
I get it. But, I mean, white is a race too. So anyone can be racist. Anyone who possesses a race can be racist.
Yes. That's really the thing. Because anyone who is a race, which that's everyone, you right. can be racist by the right. definition of that word. If liberals want to have a way to describe white male patriarchy in the way they choose to, then racist isn't the right word. It just isn't. That word's already taken. So we need to, if you want to, we need a different word because it's not racist. Because I'm a little bit tired of my brilliant, talented, super left liberal, college educated friends excusing me for my gender, sexuality, and skin color.
Right, right.
Like
it's that itself is racist, right? That's the contradiction. The left is so often perpetrating the very thing that they're speaking about or against.
It's like true.
You shouldn't judge someone by their race or their class. But you don't know that because you're a white male, middle class. You know, it's like
whoa.
You're just creating this closed knot, and it's like a true fucking hallucination. People have mental hallucinations where they're just in this mindset, and it's like, no, I know that I'm right. And they're not open to any other mutation that's going to come in. They're just in that holding pattern, not letting the mutation come in. And fuck that, dude. If you're not changing your mind about important stuff and semi-important stuff on a regular basis, then, as Sam Harris said, you're not really in dialogue with the world. Again, ironic because he's been staunch in his views.
And he actually is a liberal. Trump. And lately, Sam Harris is very much blaming the liberals for this.
There's been a lot of pushback against liberals. Dave Rubin, too.
Sam Harris is a liberal.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's pushing against liberals.
Right, right. Pushing back.
He's like, whoop, too far.
And Dave, you know, Dave Rubin. I don't know if you know who that is.
I just know the name.
Yeah. He's similar move that he's just recently done. He's like, I don't know what the left is all about now. I know the views that I have used to be considered
left,
liberal, left, but now inviting, it's something else.
Loving, caring. So where's that? Like, where's that energy? Where's the inviting, loving, caring for?
There could be like a, you know.
Yeah, and then.
And that would be sort of cool. People working together. There's little fluctuations.
But what if it was like there was one here too? It was like da 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 boom.
Oh yeah, yeah. Periodically.
Yeah, there's periodic. Yeah. So we have this cool diagram. If you can't see it.
And we're back. Welcome. So
we were on the topic of politics, transgenderism, feminism, this sort of, ouch. What does it mean, left and right? How do we determine where both have their place? Mm-hmm. And I think we're,
as long as we're constantly throwing ideas out there and they're butting against each other and they're we're trying to bubble up to a better idea. I think that's what's important about the process. Process of
doing conversation is how we get there.
Yeah.
There's really no other way.
And without free speech, you can't have a conversation. Free speech is a way to avoid violence.
It's true, but people are now treating free speech as violence.
Right, right. Again, topsy-turvy world that we live in, my friend.
It's a weird one.
Men are women, women are men.
Which is fine. If I wanted to be a woman, I'll be a woman.
It's all topsy-turvy.
Making a law saying that other people have to use these words to address me.
It would be oppressive.
It would be. Oppressive.
Just imagine that. Like you just forgot. You honestly just forgot to say that to somebody. And then you're arrested. Like that's what it looks like on the ground. Imagine the execution of that law.
Below that person. Imagine that person had a power over you. And you spoke wrongly. I mean, that would be ultimate corruption.
Right.
Ultimate. If they were in power over you.
But another step in the enslavement fucking pyramid.
So we're not going to do that. That's not
the
plan.
I'm for minimum enslavement. I'm against the enslavement of the body and the enslavement of the mind.
But you're pro-enslavement of the butt? Or what do you mean?
Pro-enslavement of the butt. Like, the government shouldn't be in our bathrooms, right?
No. Each county should be in its bathroom, maybe. Maybe. Right. In a county.
The government shouldn't be in...
The federal government.
My bedroom.
No.
You know what? Maybe you should go into politics, man. I mean...
I've thought a little about that.
The beauty of the democratic process is that you could just go to a town hall meeting and you could just be a selectman and... congressman or whatever.
I don't have a dark past. There's no criminal record. Like, it could work.
But yes, and it would be a cool way for you to experiment within the system itself. Like, can I push the resource-based economy thing? How much traction is that going to get? You realize that you have to play the game, but you're still hoping to change the game.
It's dangerous. You know...
It'd be hard to stay integral.
Yeah,
it would be a great challenge to that.
Ooh, to integrity, empathy. Yeah. It would be a great test.
Every day you'd be challenging your empathy and your integrity. And you don't have a checkered past. No prostitutes.
None. There's no crimes. It's just like fucking parking tickets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same here.
So maybe you could run also.
Be interesting.
What if we both ran or something?
Maybe this is our. Maybe we'll cite this episode in like 10 years when we're like battling out some lawsuit against each other. Like, you said this. No, but pan empathy.
Empathy for all living entities. Which really replaces the word respect, which respect as a word I find troubling because you can't really nail down a physical action of respect. You can nail down a physical action of empathy, listening calmly.
Huh. That's a good point.
You can't nail down what respect, an act of respect would be. So... respect is sort of a magic term, like perfection or balance.
Right. It's culturally defined too, because maybe in Japan or something, there could be a real physical thing, the bow, maybe, right?
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
But
here, it's like so much don't give me eye contact, because if you give eye contact to the wrong guy, it's a problem.
Right, or even if you hold eye contact for way too long
with a stranger. Yeah, if we just do this with a stranger, just like staring.
You're on the subway, just staring at some guy.
You just do this?
And then he gets
it's
up.
It's a problem.
He gets up and he's like, what the fuck's your problem,
dude? And you're like, dude, I'm just connecting. I'm a human. You're human. Let's be humans, bro.
Yeah. That is a good point, though. What is the signal of respect in America?
Nonviolence.
Can it be distilled to a physical thing? Like a,
I think it's not acting violently. I think that's respect.
So it's the absence of a physical.
Yeah, that's what I think. How else could you define it? You obey. You say yes when I ask a question. You do. It's like no, that's not respect. Respect is like perfection or balance. It's not real.
Hmm. Food for thought, for sure.
NBC coming at you.
Respect is not real, Drew Clark.
Respect isn't real because it's a word that we use that doesn't really mean anything. And it has a presupposition of ideals depending on your group.
I think it means something.
It depends on your group.
Doesn't it have a definition? The word.
I'm sure we could use our machines to ask Lord Google what the truth is. But
it's sort of related to the golden rule, isn't it?
You could argue it was related. You could, but I guess
you could murder someone that you respect. Respect is sort of divorced from morality.
Yeah. What even really is it? You define respect.
You want me to consult Lord Google? I will.
Consult the Lord.
I don't think I have internet access out here though, so can't do it.
Well, I can.
So here we go. In the meantime.
Define respect.
Respect means a feeling of deep admiration for someone or something elicited by their abilities, qualities, or achievements.
Thank you. Admiration. So it's almost a sentimental feeling.
So then how do you nail down the action of that?
Right. Well, how do you nail down the action of other things that aren't?
Give me another example. Give me another example.
How do you nail down friendship, physical action?
There is.
What do you got?
An interval. Whatever the interval is, you're live, bro.
Is that live?
Yeah. Cool. Whatever the interval is that you connect with your friend, however that is.
So it's a time.
No, there's whichever interval is. I like that. Whichever interval it is, you connect with a person and there's a feeling where you get to tell them what's going on and they listen. And whatever happens, they listen.
Right.
And then mutually nourishing relationships include where then that role is reversed.
Well, I would say mutually nourishing defines friendship.
Yeah, basically that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it weirder, but that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, in that case, I agree. Totally.
Cheers.
So the physical action of friendship is a subjective listening, receiving moment.
Mm-hmm. If your friends don't listen to you, they aren't your friends.
True dat. So everyone listening right now, thank you, friends.
I think now it's time to hear a word from our sponsor.
Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Final Corp brings you all of the things you need. Remember, finalcorp.com. Your one-stop shop for all of your needs. Remember, Final Corp. Finally, a corporation with all of its only yours needs in mind.
Final Corp. Finally, a corporation with only its best interests in mind.
Thank you, Final Corp. Sponsors for
bringing the show
almost,
in.
Almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
Final this Corp. Summer it'll be a year? Two,
50,
year and a half?
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience. Final Corp wants to introduce its barrel-aged imperial mayonnaise.
Help us slide mayonnaise onto food. Final Corp.
Final Corp.
50 flavors of mayonnaise, 50 years of experience.
And we're back. Welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. We're going a little long here, but that's okay.
So, this is the next one we're tasting. I haven't had it yet. Voodoo Ranger. It's from New Belgium.
Voodoo Ranger.
Let's see here. Wow. Well, okay.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for being here. And thank you, Aubrey, for taking the time out of your day to be here with me at Gradient Studios. It tastes like a New Belgium proprietary yeast and malt base. It's interesting. Breweries do that where they're like, they get stuck in this family of yeasts, and then so many things taste like their brewery. I think it's they get stuck in a family of yeasts and a family of malts, and then you just...
That's why you need the mutation to come in.
Mm-hmm. The little brewery that fucks that all up.
You need a fly to fly into the hopper or whatever.
Uh-huh, and drop and some other
like,
yeast.
Wow, that tastes weird.
It's like, oh, but...
It could be because of this flavor that was induced because of this.
Yeah, huh. You need the wild element.
Maybe more honey.
Oh, maybe mostly honey.
I'm beginning to come around to this idea that everything is evolution. Everything operates by the principles of evolution. Realms of thought, politics, culture, mathematics, science.
They're all evolving.
They're all evolving, and it's all like pretty steady progress for a while, long periods of time. Steady progress or stagnation or plateaus. And then suddenly something comes in from left field, and it's like, it just changes the whole system. The mutation comes in.
Metallic hydrogen.
Put a couple exclamation points after it.
Cool. Thanks.
Metallic hydrogen.
Metallic hydrogen.
I mean, if we had a cheap... what's it called? The space needle.
The cheap, like the SpaceX?
What do you mean? Space Needle. What's it called? So you have the tallest mountain in the world, right? Uh-huh. Figure out which one that is. And then you build a rail system, maglev rail system to the very top of it. So that it ends up, when it launches, it's at the highest point on Earth. And it launches through the atmosphere, so it has the least amount of atmospheric friction possible.
So it's like because starting it's launching at 20,000 feet. Yeah, it's like the highest mountain isn't like near that somewhere.
I mean,
Everest is like in the teens.
Kilimanjaro. What is it? What's the highest?
It's some obscure one.
It is obscure one.
It's actually the tallest, but like we may not. I don't know. Whichever one we could build the thing at the highest point, we're going to start in like 20,000 feet. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And the idea is you're not using, I think there's some fuel on the ship, but basically you're just accelerating by magnetic induction, right? And all the continuous rail that goes to the top, the tippy top of the highest mountain on the Earth.
It would be a hybrid.
So it goes to the very top of that. And you're launched to the atmosphere where there's very little atmospheric resistance, so there's not all that initial rocket bullshit with it.
Yeah.
Sitting there like.
Yeah. They burn so much fuel just getting there.
You're already super high. Yeah, you are. And if you need the rockets, you have it, but you probably don't. You're just launched like a bullet into the atmosphere, above the atmosphere. And once you're past the atmosphere.
You initiate rockets.
Do whatever you want.
And fucking get out of here. Yeah, I'm down with
that's
that.
That's one of the mega launch systems.
What do they call that?
I think it's called the space Space Needle or the, I mean, it's like maglev.
It's maglev. It's open air maglev.
It's like a gun.
Yeah, a magnetic gun.
Magnetic gun that shoots a spacefaring.
Can people load into space. Handle the G's of those things, or is it just for robots?
That's the main issue with that one. That one could launch. You could just be shooting shipping containers every 10 seconds, right? Just. On this system, but you can't really have people in it.
And you couldn't
ship certain cargo, right? Probably couldn't ship livestock or something that would just get killed because of the amount of G's. But you could ship like iron and stuff,
gold,
you know, like raw materials,
coal,
dirt, yeah.
Copper.
And eventually, you could launch people. I think.
Can we, maybe we could have two modes. Maybe we could have, like, this mode takes way more fuel and uses less magnet, but a human can survive the G-force.
Right.
And then maybe there's,
just
like,
wouldn't
a
accelerate
fuck it
as
mode.
Fast.
Right. There's a fuck it mode for the cargo.
Right. Totally. The cargo, you figure out what the maximum parameter is, and then you just dial back a little bit from that. Right.
Yeah.
That's how you... So it would be like an automatic weapon. It'd be like an automatic weapon firing into space all this stuff.
Shit.
And I think, I mean, that's just like airports are nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. Every 10 minutes.
I have some experience with those.
Yeah, every 10 minutes you see a fucking plane land.
It's every second, 30 seconds.
Yeah. Right? Just a continuous stream.
It's 30
seconds.
That's
what it would be. That's what it would be. The maglev space catapult or whatever.
How do we catch these babies more efficiently? Because Elon just did a successful landing. You know about his project?
Well, they wouldn't. They're not designed to come back down. They're designed to go into space and go somewhere else or stay up there.
But then, okay. Do you know about our space trash problem?
Yes. It's a big problem.
It's a problem. So
and someone's going to make trillions of dollars cleaning that up one day.
Maybe that's us, bro.
If you could have a satellite with a laser.
They're talking about nets. They're talking about sending up a satellite with nets that would catch it and be stationary. And
right.
then it would fall,
right,
burn
right.
down. And
geosynchronous orbit and all the debris passing through it. Dude. That's fucking awesome.
They're already talking about that. And like, I think we
I
need
love
to.
That.
I think we need to. I think aliens go by
absolutely
and they're like,
need to, yeah.
Look at that fucking trash heap. What are these retards doing?
And there's I've seen it. There's a there's like an online
I love retards.
Visualization of it. And when you turn on, you know, you turn on like satellites, then like old space debris, and then like natural debris. And there's all these layers, right?
Hmm.
If you turn all of them on in the simulation, it's like, yeah, Earth is just surrounded by this fucking junkyard of debris. It's crazy. It's
yeah,
it's space junk. Space junk, like you said. And it's a fucking lot.
Yeah.
It's not just here and there.
It's totally visible. So we're gonna not keep adding to that.
Yeah,
is what
and,
I'm saying.
And it does tend to concentrate itself in a certain altitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's why the International Space Station is pretty much free from shit hitting it.
Yeah. I mean, did you hear that China's going to make its own space station? Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, China's going to make their
That's
own
cool.
fucking space station. So there's going to be the International Space Station and a Chinese mm-hmm. space station.
Right.
I think that's a good idea. I think that's a really good idea.
I think it's the beginning of, like, you know, maybe in 50 years, you could have a trailer, space trailer.
What do you mean?
Or like a space camper?
Orbit
home. Like, yeah, I have a home. It's in orbit.
Oh.
I go there like once a year.
And you can spend some time up there.
Because
shipping
containers
can bring you shit.
Yeah, I usually spend 2 or 3 weeks, you know, maybe 1 or 2 weeks there. Because after that, I get all kind of flabby and I can't acclimate to Earth
right,
gravity.
Right, because it fucks you up.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I go in there in the winters. I have two properties.
I have one
in Florida, one in California. But then I also have an orbit home. Dude, I like in 100 years, that's definitely going
to
be there.
So then you get a ride from SpaceX up to your orbit home, or how do you get there?
Yeah, or just a little shuttle.
And then and why not? Why wouldn't they be like 5,000 square feet? Like, why wouldn't they be?
Yeah, shuttle to a port station, and then from the port station, which is like an airport, but it would be a spaceport. So it'd be in orbit, and you arrive there, and then from there you go to your little home plot thing.
Dude, we could do our podcast up there in space orbit, and we could probably project it to a lot more places from that altitude, like probably like 2/3 of the Earth.
Right.
Right?
Radio free empathy.
Oh, totally. Shit.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We need a space station, bro. How do we get that? We need a sea station, too.
Cozy up to Elon Musk.
I think he's generally good for the world. I'd work for him.
I mean, you would need to piggyback and make your own business off of that idea.
Easy. I provide solution orientation. Solution opportunities for the crews of these various groups. They let me know their challenge with another crewmate, and we'll develop tools and practices to initiate what needs are unmet and meet them. I could do that.
You could be the California congressman who's like all about space. All about human flourishment in space.
That's cool. That's cool, cool to think about.
Resource-based economy, space exploration, colonization. Really not exploration because... Fuck, we just discovered planetary system very similar to ours. You hear about that?
It was about a week ago.
A week ago.
We determined that there a
that
nearby,
might as well be today.
It might as well. It's today. We determined today that there's a nearby solar system with a much smaller, much dimmer star. It's very small compared to ours. And it's much dimmer, and it has 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting it much closer than we are. So by the numbers...
You could have multiple variations of the Goldilocks scenario.
Because of the size of the star.
Right. Stars small, planets
and you're closer,
are close.
Right.
Maybe...
Same Goldilocks. Totally.
5 of the 7 are like flourishing with life.
There's most likely liquid water. Most likely. And what do you get with
liquid
water?
That's what you need.
What do you get?
You get life.
So there's probably fucking life. It's not that far.
That's the minimum.
It's not that far away either.
The minimum is water and heat.
This is incredible.
You don't
we just found a new goal. We need to get there.
Right.
That's a new goal.
Exactly.
We need to get there. We need to check out the
fuck
out.
That's what I'm talking about. Hell yeah. We need to get off this rock.
We do.
And it's going to be... brutal. It's going to be like founding a new world. It's going to be just bloodshed. Massive.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard.
Think about, 30,000 deaths from car accidents each year.
It's more than
it's going to be like that in the first couple of years. But everyone's going to go willingly. Everyone's going to die willingly,
I'll go. If I can bring my lady and my dogs, I'll go.
Yeah. Just... Virgin Galactic hotel that's in orbit. You could just go there for $1,000 a piece.
Dude, there's going to be hotels in orbit for
sure. It sounds crazy, but that's the natural evolution. There's going to be a mutation that comes in, and the future's even going to be even weirder, right?
Oof.
But there will at least be that. You'll
hotel
be able to go to a hotel.
Orbit.com for real.
Yeah. And like you'll be sitting there, and we'll be doing this podcast. There'll be a huge spherical bubble of glass over us, and the Earth will be there. because we're actually going like this.
So it'll be
as,
like
as we're doing this podcast.
We'll like see the Earth will be like 12 right. o'clock.
If we look that way or that way, we'll see to the horizon on each side, curving upward.
Fucking, I'm in. I'm on board.
I'm in.
Don't you know that with a light whistle you can go to a place where we podcast explore where we're going to the podcast for empathy and imagination. Thanks for listening to the podcast for empathy and imagination.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you could rate on iTunes and maybe leave a review, that would be cool. Thank you so much
for
listening.
Thank you so much for listening.
It's because of you that we do this, and it's because of you that we are happy. Thank you.
Thanks for being here.